This is the We Make Success Happen podcast with Matt Callanan.
My name is Matt Callanan. I'm a former international DJ and musician turned filmmaker with We Make Film Happen and founder of the Kindness Project. We make good happen. Coming up is Kerry Aldridge, London Marathon's last finisher. Hello and welcome to We Make Success Happen. Today with amazing human, Kerry Aldridge. Hello.
Hi.
Lovely to see you again.
And you.
So you were officially the London Marathon's last finisher.
I was. That's my title.
Is that something you're proud of? Because you kind of turned a sort of sad story into a positive one.
Yeah. I think it's difficult. I don't really want to be known as the last finisher, but when I look at what's happened since and the reaction I've got from people, I'm just me. And if that's what I am, then so be it, really. I would prefer to be just Keza, who completed the London Marathon.
Well, you may not be here, I guess, or you may not be all over the news if...
No.
You know, you're a bit faster or something.
I know. One of my friends actually said to me, she went, do you know what? She said, if you weren't such a rubbish runner, you wouldn't have raised as much money and you wouldn't be all over the news and everything. So actually, it's good that you're a rubbish runner. So I was like, okay, I'll take that.
Because was that your first marathon?
Yeah. Yeah, it was my first marathon. I'd only done... Well, I'd done two half marathons before that, but when I actually signed up to run London, I'd only been running 4 months and I was only running up to 10K. So, I sort of set myself a bit of a challenge because it's my 40th year. So I thought, do you know, I'm going to do 40 things in my 40th year, and running the London Marathon was one of them.
Was it like to come last as well?
No, but do you know what, actually... I could now have two things, can I? Two challenges. I came last and, ran the marathon and raised lots of money for charity. So,
do you want to talk through what actually kind of happened for you at the London Marathon and then what was created as a result?
Obviously, I sort of woke up on marathon day, really quite nervous, quite excited. Well, I say woke up, I don't know if I actually got any sleep the night before, but I got myself ready, said goodbye to my family, met up with some other runners. We went in, met at Blackheath, and that was amazing. Such a buzzing experience. You can imagine being surrounded by all these runners with all these great stories about charity work. I probably spent quite a lot of time crying, listening to other people's stories.
Right to the start, already crying.
I'd belonged to this Facebook group, a London Marathon support group, and I'd posted on there a couple of days before that I dyed my hair blue because the charity colours I was running for are blue. So loads of people kept coming up to me going, hey, Keza. And I was like, how do you know me? And I was like, oh, yeah, my hair. me and a couple of the other girls we spent quite a lot of time in the toilet queues and having a chat about the race and stuff, and then it was time to go, and that was quite daunting, although it was about an hour after Mo and the rest of the guys had set off before we actually set off. And then we started okay with my pace to start off with, and then it just got crazy even just before because there's three different starts and they merge at about 3 miles. There was cleanup crews right up my ass, really, and I was trying to run faster. They were there with chemicals spraying the road, and they talk about this thing called the blue line, and they put this blue line down and they say, if you follow that, that's the shortest distance that you can guarantee that you'll run the marathon, but it's like the shortest way.
Yeah.
Because I couldn't follow the blue line because they were spraying it and getting rid of it.
Oh wow. So it's a blue line on the floor.
Quite soon I was close at that point to the 7.5 hour pacer, and I heard her sort of shout in and on the mobile phone, and I saw people around her sort of getting quite anxious. And then, you know, there was cleanup crews and they were taking down the scaffolding and the mile markers, and they were sort of shouting at people, well, if you were trained harder, or if you weren't as fat, you'd be able to run faster. And it just got crazy. I was in my own headspace at that point, really. So I just carried on running. And then I got to about the Cutty Sark mark, and then I sort of lost the pacer. She'd gone ahead. I was with another group of sort of back runners. There was one woman who suffers quite badly from anxiety and was getting quite anxious. So I said, just stay with me. We'll get there. Just stay with me. And I lost her. There was a woman who'd been trying to break a world record for running in ice skates. She'd abandoned the ice skates and was in a lot of pain and was asking people, is there a sports shop? Can I go and buy some trainers? So it was all pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And then it got lonely. I was on my own. And I was quite fortunate in some respects that the guys that were taking the scaffolding down, they had these big trolley beds and they sort of became my own little support crew. So they'd be ahead of me, then I'd run ahead of them, then they'd run ahead of me, they'd come ahead of me, and they were cheering me and they were shouting at people up in the flats to cheer me on and stuff. But yeah, I had no idea that was going to happen that day. I just thought I was going to run the marathon.
Yeah.
Like other people, really.
Because how were you feeling at that point then, knowing that all these kind of crews were kind of cleaning up behind you?
Yeah, I think I was quite anxious and it was increasing the pressure because I always knew I was going to be a slow runner. By my training, I should have been able to do it in the cutoff, so I should have been at about 8 hours. And up to halfway, I was on that pace. But you can imagine, you've got all these cleanup trucks behind you, the crowds are disappearing. So the pressure you're feeling to try and increase your pace, knowing that if you do that, you'll risk injury, that was really hard. But I think one of the most defining moments for me, and I did something which I had no idea was going to spark everything off, but they talk in about the London Marathon about Tower Bridge being your defining moment. And they talk about how you turn this corner, and it's really weird because you're just down a residential street, then you turn the corner and then you're faced with London Bridge. They talk about how there's a wall of sound, how there's crowds everywhere. And I turned that corner and there was just no one. And I could feel the tears pricking my eyes and I was like, trying not to cry. And then my watch pinged and I had somebody from a running community on Facebook called Run Mummy Run trying to track me. And she sent me a message saying, are you okay, lovely? Because you haven't moved since 10K. And I was like, what do you mean I haven't moved? I haven't stopped running. And then I realised, oh, they're taking up the tracking mats.
No.
So all of a sudden, I was really panicked because I had my husband and my little boy out on the course somewhere. I had my best friend, I had my sister, and I had my two nephews and my brother-in-law. And I was like, how are they going to know where I am and that I'm okay? And so I thought back to a little training video I did a couple of weeks before, which I'd put on a Facebook page I have, and I thought, right, I'll do that, get that on, and then know I'm okay.
Yeah.
But as I started filming, the tears just started coming. Yeah, I put this video on thinking it was just for my friends and family, and then I logged off Facebook, put my phone away, and thought, right, now it's, you've just got to carry on now. There was just no way I was going to stop. But I had no idea what I'd started on Facebook, really. And then just as I got over the bridge, I saw my sister and my nephews, and my brother-in-law took a picture of me, which has sort of become my picture of the marathon. But yeah, from that point, it was really hard going because there was basically no water stations, no mile markers. Later on in the course, I felt quite embarrassed because I had to ask some of the officials, what way did I need to go? And they sort of looked at me as if I had three heads. And I was like, look, I'm still trying to run the marathon here. What way do I need to go? And there was, yeah, a few dark moments, shall we say.
Did you want to give up at any point then?
No, that was never an option.
That's good.
Never an option.
What kept you going then?
My little boy and the reason why I was doing the marathon, the charity I was running for. And then I also, as part of my fundraising, I'd asked people to sponsor a mile in someone's memory, and I had them all printed on my back of my vest. So I'd had 26 people trust me with the memory of their loved ones. So how could I give up? So there was no way I was going to give up. And then the one moment, which was really hard, but just cemented everything for me, was it about mile 17, I met this family. There was a lady and her husband and I think their little girl. And they were just clapping and going, come on, you can do it. And then she saw on my running vest that I was running for the Miscarriage Association. And she just gave me the biggest hug ever. Her tears were going, my tears were going. And she just said, will you promise me that you'll finish for my Three Angels? And she said, I will make sure that I look out to make sure that you finish. Just promise me that you'll complete it. And then that was it. Promise was made then, and there was no way that I could stop. Although there was one small moment.
Mm.
One small moment at about mile 24, 25, when, because I was right at the back, they closed some of the route, so I had to go up this set of stairs.
Oh, no.
To get up onto a bridge to then go down the other side. And I put one foot on the bottom stair and I had my hand on the rail and I turned to my brother-in-law who was there at that point and went, I can't do it. And he just said, I won't repeat the word he used, but he just said to me, I haven't come all this way and experienced all of this for you to stop now. Get up those stairs. So I took a deep breath and I carried on. But that was the only moment I faltered.
Yeah, anyone who's done any kind of long distance running will hate any any stairs that suddenly appear.
It was.
That's not what you want at the towards the end of the marathon, is it?
It's not. I was like, how cruel is this? But yeah, there was no way I was going to give up.
So what was it like sort of doing that kind of final mile and, you know, the final kind of couple of hundred metres?
It was really, I remember it was at Horse Guards Parade, and of course they're all the organisers are taking everything down, so all the, you know, the finishes that you see on TV, they aren't there anymore.
Wow.
So I'm starting to go down Horse Guards Parade. At that point, I've got all my family with me, my best friend with me.
Yeah.
And my best friend, I love her to bits, but she was like, do you want a jelly baby? I was like, no. Do you want some water? I was like, no. And she went, do you want some music? And I was like, no. But she knows me so well. She got her phone out. It was eerily silent, but she got her phone out and she put on This Is Me from The Greatest Showman. And yeah, that was a special moment. And then as we got down to the bottom of Horse Guards Parade by the palace, they separated me from my family and said, right, we'll take you in now to the finish. You've got to go in the finish on your own. And so I had to say goodbye to my family.
Oh.
And at that point, I still didn't know whether I was going to get a medal. I thought that I wasn't. And I remember a woman saying to me, do you honestly think... She went, oh, you just got to finish over here. Your medal's waiting for you. And I started crying, going, really? I'll get a medal? And she's like, do you honestly think we wouldn't give a medal to someone like you that's raised as much money as you have today? And I didn't really take that on board at that time. So she took me over and then she said, right, now you just need to go down this bit on your own. She went, you've got to go run down there and there's a finish. So I started going and it was just this little path at the side of the park. And as I started, there was this group of Chinese tourists coming towards me with their cameras. And I was just like, I turned back and looked at her and she shrugged. And I was just like, out of my way, I'm running the marathon. And then these Chinese tourists just parted either side of the path and they clapped me over the finishing line.
Nice.
So that was my finish.
That's kind of a strange finish, isn't it?
It was a really strange finish. Strange finish to a really strange day. Really strange. And then I was standing there and they gave me my goodie bag and my medal. And they just said, oh, we're really sorry, but we've run out of all of the T-shirts apart from extra small. And I just went, do I look like an extra small? Yeah, so that was probably one of my worst moments. I wasn't particularly nice at that point. But then my little boy came running up to me with open, stretched arms. And he just went, Mummy, I love you just the way you are. And that was my moment.
How did you feel then?
Oh, all the emotion that I'd sort of kept inside during the day, all the pain I was feeling in my feet. I started shaking. I was feeling cold. I was feeling sick. But none of that mattered. All it mattered was that one moment. And he was the reason. I wanted him to see that if you reach for the stars, you can do anything. And that moment was just priceless. And yeah, so, because it's really weird, I I hate having my photo taken, but the day before the marathon, we'd gone to the expo and I'd gone on and on and on at my husband and made him pay over £100 for this photo package.
Yeah.
And of course, I had no photos because all the photographers went. Oh. So about halfway, so about 17 miles in, 18 miles, I saw my husband and I was like going, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. And he's like, what are you sorry for? You're running a marathon. I went, I'm sorry I paid, what made you pay all that money out for photos? And that was all in my head. But that one moment with my little boy just saying that to me with those open arms, it just didn't matter. Nothing mattered, just that. And then I found out that this little video I'd put on Facebook had gone viral, which was crazy.
Yeah, really when crazy. When did you realise the video had sort of picked up traction?
I was probably at about mile 19, 20, I saw my best friend and she said, Darren's just texted me and said that your video's gone viral. I went, shut up, what are you talking about? I'm trying to run a marathon, shut up. And didn't think anything else of it. But it was later on, probably when we got back to the hotel, which was another funny story. But then I checked my phone and it just has gone mental. But yeah, getting back into our hotel room was, it was a bit of like a carry-on film, really. So our key card weren't working, the door, and it hadn't worked the previous day. And I'd told my husband that morning, please sort it out, because when I get back to the hotel, I don't want to be locked out the door.
Mm.
We were locked outside. Mm-hmm. And he'd gone back down to reception.
Did you kick the hotel door down?
I was trying to kick it down. And then he'd gone back down three times with this key card. And I was like literally just like leaning against the door, looking at my friend going, just sort him out. And then they brought up this handyman who wanted to start fixing the lock on the door. And I was like, just tell him to come away. So yeah, it was pretty crazy just getting back into the hotel room as well. So yeah, all in all, it was a strange day.
So for anyone who hasn't seen the video, what was actually in that video? What did you record?
It was just my face. And that's the thing. Every time I see it, it's horrible. It's just my face. It's my face and crying, saying, I'm okay. I'm halfway. They're packing up all around me, but I will finish. And that was literally all it was. But I was like, I think I said something like, they're packing up, but I don't care. I'm going to carry on regardless. It was only literally 30 seconds, but all you see is this snotty face and crying tears. And then loads of people shared it on my Facebook page. And every time they shared it, it sort of like got frozen with this face. So I'd log on to Facebook to see my face, which was pretty crazy. But yeah.
Because you ended up in all loads of the news and media, didn't you?
Yeah, so it just went crazy. I think by the Monday and the Tuesday, that video had something like 30,000 hits, and I was getting messages from all over the world. And then slowly, I started getting messages from Radio Wales, will you come in and speak to us? And then I just finished that, and then I had ITV, well, can you come in for the 6 o'clock news? And then I had Radio 5 Live, will you come on air and talk to us? And it was just crazy because I'm just me, and I couldn't believe anyone would want to listen to what I have to say. And I was just like, all I am is just somebody that was running the marathon. But yeah, it went pretty crazy for quite some time. And then it was like I'd end up in the Daily Mail or the newspapers as well, and then someone else would share it and it was all on my page and stuff. But yeah, it's been pretty a crazy ride.
What do you think could make it better for things like the events like the London Marathon, in terms of there's going to be some slower people, or for whatever reason, will run it at a slower pace? Yeah. What do you think events could do for people in your kind of situation?
I think it's really difficult because I understand that they have to get London moving again. Do you know what I mean? I completely understand that. But part of it for me is I never saw none of those roads reopened any time when I was around there. So, but I think it's just knowing that there are going to be some slower runners. So even, do you know what, just having the mile markers on the lampposts so that they can leave them up there, or having a stash of water I think that that's the main thing. There has been quite a lot of talk, and there's been a sort of Facebook group and a movement starting since the marathon called Party at the Back, where
really?
Yeah, where they're talking about, you know, and lots of the running community talk about coming to support those who are slower runners and those that are, you know, if you want, party at the back. And so that's picked up quite a lot of pace as well. For me, I wrote an open letter to the London Marathon after it all happened, because there'd been something and it was printed that they'd apologised to me and I hadn't heard anything from them. So I wrote an open letter to them. And I think for me, there's two issues in that London Marathon is one of the majors. It is one of the biggest marathons, but they've always prided themselves on that they're everybody's race and that it's for charity and they raise all this money for charity. And like this year there was a big campaign and it was like saying thanks a billion, because by the end of the marathon they would have raised £1 billion since it started. So what I wrote in my letter is you need to really think what you want from the event. If you want it to be an elitist marathon, then make it an elitist marathon where you've got a cut-off time like Chicago or like New York. But if you really do want to make it everybody's race and you really do want that uniqueness, which is London with charity runners and stuff, really mean it when you say that it's going to be inclusive. And I haven't got all the answers, but, you know, I've been honest with London Marathon. I've given them my feedback. They've done a complete investigation. They've spoken to a lot of people. There's going to be a focus group of some of the runners that live near London who was affected. And I think it's just that people need to be realistic. You know, I wasn't stupid when I signed up. I knew I was going to be slow, but I should have been able to do it in 8 hours. But with all those conditions, it was just really difficult. I'm starting my training a lot earlier this year, so I'm hopefully that, you know, next year will be a different experience for me. So you have to be accountable yourself, but I think there is that thing about making sure that you have got some facilities there for back of the pack runners.
So you are doing it again then?
I am. Crazy. Yeah.
When did you decide that? I take it it wasn't right at the end. I'm going to do that again.
As I was coming around the corner by London Marathon, there was this guy that was walking with me, one of the officials. He was probably over about 6'3" or 6'4". I mean, mind you, everyone's tall compared to me, but he was quite tall. And he was like, so have you had a good day? And I was like, yeah. He's like, so you signing up for next year? And I was like, ask me tomorrow. And I wasn't going to do it. The ballot came out for the next year, and I think I finally put in for the ballot at about 10 o'clock the last night that you could, and I hadn't told anyone. And then the charity that I ran for indicated it if I did apply for a place, they would consider it. So I said to my husband, I said, you know what, actually I want a rematch. So I did apply for the charity. I did get a charity place, but I've also been really fortunate that what came out of the London Marathon's own investigation, they've gifted everyone a place who finished 7 hours or more for free. And we're calling them apology places rather than free places. So I've actually got one of those places. So I've given my charity place back so they can have another runner. But as far as I'm concerned, I'm treating it like it's a charity place and I'm raising as much money as I would have if I was a charity runner. But yeah, I want my rematch. I want to be able to stand there and show that I deserve to be there, that I am a serious runner and that I can do it.
That's very noble. That's great. Because it wasn't that long ago, really, that you started running.
No, January 2018 was when I first put on my trainers. I couldn't even walk 5K when I first started, let alone I couldn't run for a bus. But I'd woken up New Year's Day, like a lot of people, with a hangover probably, sat with my mates talking about New Year's resolutions. And I don't do resolutions because I break them within half an hour. So I said I was going to make some commitments to myself and to my family. And I had to be brutally honest with myself. I can't say I was unhappy because I have my husband and my little boy, but I was unhappy in myself. You know, I couldn't do what I wanted to do with my son. It hurt when I walked long distances. I was conscious my little boy was going to be starting school in the September, and I thought, you know what, if the one thing I can do is help him settle in school by him not being bullied for having a fat mummy, that's what I was going to do. So that's why I started. But it was almost like there was, I don't know, a spy or something in, because as I was talking to my friends, I was flicking through Facebook and I came across this plus size ladies running club. So, and that's what I signed up for, because I'd always wanted to do Race for Life and I never thought I'd be able to do it. So when I started in January 2018, my goal was to run a 5K Race for Life. And you could say that I did do the Race for Life, but in a very different way.
How was the running initially then?
Oh, so hard. So hard. I remember the first time I went to this group, the running leader looks back on it now and laughs and makes me laugh, but I'd gone and it was so cold, so I dressed up in different layers. I probably looked like a bit of an abominable snowman, and she was like, how are you gonna run with all that on? Yeah, I found it really hard. It was really slow, and they would do, like, we would increase the amount of time we'd run for and decrease the amount of time we were walking for. But I remember I finished it and I was like, I can't believe I've just done that. Was nearly sick, but wasn't. And then I got in the car and I felt invincible. So stupid me decided I was going to go to Tesco and do some shopping. Got out the car and everything just seized. And I was like, oh my goodness, what am I going to do now? So I ended up just walking around aimlessly in Tesco's, not knowing what I wanted to buy, for about an hour until my legs unseized. My husband probably wondered what on earth had happened to me or who had abducted me. So yeah, I had some pretty funny stories along the way of when I started running as well.
The We Make Success Happen podcast is kindly brought to you by We Make Film Happen.
We've filmed everyone from Richard Branson to George Clooney. We filmed bands on top of igloos through to filming adventurers going up active volcanoes. So if you want an amazing message through video, give me a shout. I'm on hello@wemakefilmhappen.com.
What advice would you give someone who might be wanting, might be in the similar kind of position as you, that wants to sort of get moving or get running? What kind of advice would you give them, and how do you keep going as well?
I'd say get some good trainers and just get out the door and start. And even if you say, right, I'm going to run from this bin to the next bin, and then I'm going to walk for 3 minutes, just do it and then just slowly build up. I mean, there's really good, the Couch to 5K apps and stuff are really good. It didn't work for me. I needed to know that I could actually do the distance. So I would start off doing the whole 5K, but I would run for 30 seconds and walk, and then I built it up. It will be hard, you know, it will be hard. There will be times when you don't want to do it, and I'm terrible because I came up with so many excuses. One day I decided I couldn't go out running because it was raining. I mean, God, it's just water. But yeah, I was the worst. I'd say to my husband, I can't go running today, it's too cold, or I can't go running today because it's raining. And he's like, oh, for God's sake, just get out there. And I think it helps if you've got a reason why you're doing it, and just keep that reason in your mind and just go for it.
Yeah, because I've done a couple of half marathons, and I've always run for usually a cancer charity. But knowing that I was training for a cancer charity or a person that apparently, you know, had died from cancer, like my dad or something, that gave me the emphasis or the kind of leverage, I guess, to get past the excuses. Because occasionally, yeah, you're sitting at home and just going, it's cold, it's raining, yeah, I can't be bothered.
Yeah.
But actually going, right, I need to train because I want to raise more money for a charity.
Yeah.
Gives you the leverage. Do you think that's true then?
Oh, absolutely. I think when I first decided to do London and I decided I was going to do it for a charity, there was only going to be one charity for me. And what I didn't realise was this journey and the journey to London was so much more than about running. I hadn't really been open about our experience of miscarriage before, and I had to sort of ask my husband's permission, because it's not just my story, it's his story. And he had never really talked to anybody about what we'd been through, and so that was really difficult. But I think that kept me going. through, you know, when I'd get up early morning and it would be dark, when I'd miss my little boy going to hip hop dance lessons or swimming because I was out on a long run, in my head I had, you're doing this for your five angels, you're doing this for all angel babies, and you're doing it for your little boy. And that just kept me going. So yeah, I think definitely having that goal, and like you say, if it's personal to you, you've got a charity that you're running for, it definitely helps.
So we only met, I'd seen your story on BBC, it was when you were all over the press, but we were actually speaking at this great event called Superwoman, which was great. But apparently that was the first time you had stood up and told your story. Because you were amazing. I thought you'd done it quite a lot.
No, so I've spoken, obviously, a little bit, a couple of times, but I've never done any public speaking, never spoke in front of that many people. And it was crazy. I've lived it, so it's just talking about myself. But I think you could probably tell quite a few times I got quite emotional, and it was difficult at times to keep going because it is such a personal story, and people still don't talk about miscarriage. It's such a taboo subject. And, you know, and I had some ladies come up to me after I spoke, and at least two of them said, thank you. I've never spoken to anybody about my experience, but you've shown me that it's okay. And you've shown me that actually perhaps it will help if I do talk about it. And that had a massive effect on me. And yeah, I mean, the whole event, that whole evening, I mean, when they first asked me to go and speak, I thought they'd made a mistake. I said to my husband, they're going to realise I'm going to get there. They're going to think I'm an imposter. But they've made a mistake asking me. But it was such an honour to speak there, and such a great experience. And I got to meet you. And I went away, and I went away that night and thought a lot about what I'd spoken about, and what you had spoken about, and what, you know, what the ladies had come and spoken to me about. And I was like, perhaps there's a reason. I could never find the reason why that happened on that particular day, but perhaps there is a reason. Perhaps I was never meant to have that London Marathon experience that everybody else has.
Yeah, perhaps you've stepped into your purpose and you found your reason.
Yeah.
Do you feel like that is maybe your purpose now?
Yeah, so I my life's changed pretty much since London, and my life in terms of work has changed as well. And who knows what's going to happen next? Quite scary and exciting at the same time, but you know, I would really like, people have spoken to me about how I've motivated them to go out and run, or even go. There's one particular lady that sticks in my mind who suffers from anxiety, and she'd contacted me and said, I could see the park from my front window, and my little girl always wanted to go to the park, but I just couldn't do it. I couldn't get out that front door. And she said, and I saw your story, and I put my trainers on and I took her to the park. And I was like, wow. So who knows what's going to happen, but I'm excited to see what the next chapter in Keza's life is going to be.
But that's great. I'm a really big believer in, you only have to inspire change in one person, and I think that's enough.
Yeah,
so that's already happening for you know, that person who had anxiety and went to the park for the first time.
Yeah.
You know, that's down to you and your story. You know, some of those women that came up and spoke to you after Superwoman and mentioned that it was the first time they'd spoken about it, it was down to you having that bravery, maybe showing your vulnerability up on stage and telling your story.
It's just crazy, because I'm just me with my little legs and, you know, that's it. That's all I am. But I've always said everything happens for a reason, and I've never known quite what the reasons have been for some of the stuff that's happened recently. And as I say, I never really spoke about my experiences before. I was obviously part of a team of runners who run for the Miscarriage Association, and we became so close, and there was, you know, men and women, and so brave telling their stories and stuff. And and I think it is that about acknowledging, you know, and I think I said this at Superwoman, but for the first time ever, I said I was a mother of six. Everybody knows me as Oshie's mum, but actually there's six. It's just that you only see one of them. So it's about, I suppose, being honest and being true to myself and acknowledging that they are part of my life and perhaps they're guiding me in some way.
Yeah, so I think the good thing that I saw in you at Superwoman when you were speaking for the first time was that you really kind of got into the emotion while you were telling your story, and we all felt it in the audience, and we were on that kind of journey. And I think that's a great way to sort of bring people into your story and your purpose and your cause, and, you know, tell them about the sort of charity work that you do. What advice would you give other people who may be fearful, not brave enough to get up on stage? Because it's a really big fear, standing up in front of, well, it was 130 women, wasn't it?
I suppose it's just that being honest and just being you, not trying to be anything else. My friend came with me that night to support me, and she's like, oh, Keza, you're going to cry again, aren't you? And I went, that's just me, and that's how I am. And I think if I was to try and be anything else, it just wouldn't come across as genuine. So I think that for anybody, it's just be true to yourself. And I think that's the only thing. Someone once said to me when I was doing a presentation for work about standing up and about imagining everyone in the audience naked. I don't think that actually works, if I'm completely honest. But I suppose it's just remembering that they're human as well. But to be honest, I just sort of got lost in the story and just was just telling, just being me.
Yeah, you were great. Well, we got lost in your story as well.
Yeah.
So what do you do as a day job then?
Well, I have been a social worker. I've been a social worker for 16 years, but I have actually very recently just ended my employment. So I don't do anything at the moment. I think I will always be a social worker at heart, and I think I will always use my social work skills. I want to try and make a difference, and I want to try and help people. I first said I wanted to be a social worker when I was 7 years old, believe it or not.
Wow.
And growing up, I had experience of having a social worker. My mum had bipolar and was very ill. Yeah, I had some great people in my life who supported me. One time my mum was extremely ill with her bipolar, and someone taught me how to make an omelette over the telephone. And then somebody else was at the door when it was ready to get the omelette out of the pan. I think I was about 8 or 9 at the time.
Wow.
I thought about those early life experiences, and that's why I wanted to do it. And then I lost my mum when I was 17 because of her illness. I've always thought about her and what she went through, and just wanted to make a difference. And I think perhaps how statutory social work is at the moment isn't for me, because I feel my wings are being a bit clipped about what I can actually do. And I think some of the things we see today, some of the things I've seen through my work, and I've seen children that take me back to me when I was a child, seen children who are overweight and haven't got anyone who really believes in them. I want to be that person. I want to believe, and I want to try and help and make a change and a difference. Don't know how I'm going to do it. As I say, I made a brave, stupid or whatever decision a few weeks ago. And yeah, I'm just thinking about where life is going to take me at the moment. Pretty crazy.
Well, it sounds like you've taken a brave decision and you've been drawn to another pathway.
Yeah, I still want to help people. Yeah, things change, life changes, and perhaps this whole crazy journey that's been started is for a reason, and it's going to take me down another path. But I don't quite know what that's going to be. I know I've had this little dream that I'd like to do. I'd like to work with some of those children that people would perhaps write off, like the people who wrote me off when I was a child. And give them help and support so they can do the best that they can. That's what I'd like to do.
Is that the kind of ideal situation in your head?
I think so. But then I think, do you know what? I'd like to work with mums like me and get them out there and do an exercise and stuff. So who knows? I think I will always be a social worker at heart. And I think I want to give back because of some of the amazing people that helped me and my mum when I was a child. But yeah, who knows?
Well, it sounds like you could do probably several of those things, couldn't it? And help people in different groups.
Yeah. So I have no real firm ideas at the moment. I think my husband's probably pretty scared because he doesn't know what I'm going to do. Because, I've always been the one that's sort of been very organised and sort of, you know, this is what I'm going to do next and this is what I'm going to do next. But,
So if for any of the people that are listening to this or watching this, who might want to collaborate with you in some way, what sort of people, companies or charities might you want to partner with?
I think that, like, charities that work with perhaps disadvantaged children and their families. I mean, I did have this dream. I used to drive down in Pontcanna past this. It was a hotel that being closed down, and I went home one night and had this dream. But I would love to open up like an old fashioned family centre that there used to be, whereby families can come together and, you know, you can work with families and the children so that they can make their best decisions that they can and be the best families and go away and have that help and support. But like real, go back to the grassroots of sort of the community social work and stuff like that. That's my real dream, but I'd need to win the lottery for that.
You never know.
But yeah.
Or we might have some multi-millionaire listeners or what.
Could you imagine? I would always want to just sort of help and give back. And I remember when I was at school, somebody had sort of like, they were talking about going on to do college and A-levels and university and stuff. And one of the people that I'd gone to school with had sort of said, oh, well, of course, Kerry, you're not going to be going to university.
Oh, wow.
And I did go to university and I had a lot of support. But I think for, you know, disadvantaged kids out there that have gone through, you know, bad life experiences and stuff, I want to give them the same message that I gave my little boy, which is if you reach for the stars, you can achieve anything. And so, yeah, who knows?
Yeah, because what would you like your legacy to be?
Oh, Kezo with her little leg showed them that she could. I think that's it, really.
I like that. What do you think success means to you?
Oh, what does success mean? Do you know, quite a few years ago, or even a couple of years ago, success meant to me that I was performing the best in my career. I was raising and going up. I was a team manager and I was going to progress further than that. Now what success means to me is that I'm the best mother and the best wife and the best woman I can be. That for my health, you know, that I'm improving things for my health. And success means for me that my little boy will grow up and he won't use the word I can't. We say in our house, there's no such thing as I can't. Sometimes we need a little bit of help. And so that's success.
How do you be a good parent?
Oh, it's difficult, isn't it?
I'm still learning all the time.
I think you're always going to learn. I think the day that you stop learning, and I learn from my little boy, I think the main thing for me is that you're always there with a hug, wipe away those tears, encourage them to try new things, catch them when they fall, because they will fall. And try and support them and show them right from wrong, I suppose. But exactly how do you be a good parent? I think I will always still be learning. Something always catches me out. He says something else which catches me out and takes me by surprise. And I think, oh, how do I respond to that? It's definitely a ride, isn't it, being a parent?
So what's next for you then? Have you got some plans, apart from doing the London Marathon next year?
So I've been working with a personal trainer and a gym owner from Caerphilly who issued me with a crazy 6 weeks challenge, which I've just finished. So I'm still going to the gym and working on me.
What was the challenge?
So the challenge was for 6 weeks, I go to his gym I have two personal training sessions a week. I follow his dietary and nutrition plans. I go to gym classes. He took my starting measurements and my starting weight and then saw what progress. But the main challenge was actually getting me through the door of a gym, because I'd never stepped foot in a gym. And people think it's really strange. How can you be a marathon runner if you've never run on a treadmill or if you haven't stepped foot in a gym? But I was petrified of the gym. So the main challenge for me was getting through that door and actually starting take part in some exercise.
How did this all come about then?
I met him whilst I was running Cardiff 10K. And he had a GoPro camera and he asked me to tell him why I ran. I think perhaps he regretted that, because I told him for ages why I ran. But he said to me, he had goosebumps. And then he told me that he was a personal trainer and a gym owner. And I think I sort of scoffed and said, you'll never get me in a gym. I'm petrified of gyms because look at me. I don't exactly look like an average runner. So I think I gave him a bit of a challenge and then he gave me one in response.
Didn't you just meet while you were
running along? So I met him while I was running. He basically had some of his gym members running the Cardiff 10K. He was supposed to be running himself, but he'd pulled his calf muscle. So he said to me, he said, do you know what? He said, I could have been really moody and just sort of sat on the sidelines being really moody, but I thought, oh, let me go and see what I can do and sort of support some of the back of the pack runners. And he met me. So perhaps it's fate. We were supposed to meet that day.
I like it. So do you think there really is this party at the back then? And what's kind of happening with that little movement?
I think there is. The only thing I'd say about it is I think there is definitely those people that are slower runners and we should be celebrated. Every single runner should be celebrated. Mm. The only thing is that I don't want people to think that we're not serious runners and that we are there just for a party. But yeah, there is definitely this movement of people that say, do you know what? I show up, I pay the same money as you, I run the same distance as you, I get the same medal as you, but it takes me longer. Let's just celebrate that. For me, that's what I think is amazing about running. It doesn't matter whether you are Mo Farah or whether you're Keza with her little legs. You run the same distances, you do the same. Let's celebrate everyone. What a fantastic world it would be if instead of putting people down because they don't run fast or they don't get PBs, we actually celebrated the fact that they were running.
I like that. Because of my association with the Kindness Project, We Make Good Happen, what's the sort of kind things that you've either seen someone do to someone else or maybe a kind act that someone has done to yourself?
So one of the kind acts which happened to me was when I was running in London. There was this lady, again, I say she's tall, I think she was over 6 foot, but she might not have been, but I'm really short. And she just said to me, can I walk with you and talk? I'll go into the shop and get you a drink or some food if you want, but can I just walk with you for a while? She said, and if you want to run, I'll try and keep up to your pace, which was going to be no problem because she's got really long legs. But she walked with me for about 2 miles, just talking, and I don't know who she is, but she was an angel sent to help me, really. So yeah, I think that was one of the kind things done to me. But I've seen, just the other week, I went to park run to support one of my friends who'd, as part of their London Marathon fundraising, they've taken 5 women from the couch to 5K, and it was sort of like their park run graduation. And one of them is a bit slower than the others. And she was so surprised. I wasn't, because I know what the running community are like. But all of her fellow runners went back. They'd finished, they'd passed the line, but they went back and they ran in with her. And for me, that's the ultimate act of kindness in the running community, is showing that we're all in it together.
That's lovely. I like that. Because I think sometimes when you were talking about the London Marathon, sometimes you don't realise if you haven't done it, where you kind of run round, there'll be people that are right at the, going the other direction, yeah, won't they? Who, yeah, are quite far ahead.
That was, I think, and that was probably one of the other kind moments I had. Do you know what? One of the kindest things you can ever do for anybody in this world is give them a hug. And I strongly believe that. As I'd come over the bridge and I was turning right to go down Canary Wharf and all of that way, and obviously all the runners were coming back out, were running back, and they knew what I had left to do, and they were on the home straight, if you like. so many of them stopped and gave me a hug or gave me a cheer or a high five or told me to keep going, that you can do it. And that is what I really like about the running community. You do have some people that are there just for PBs, and, you know, I did have some not so nice comments made about my time and stuff. But in the main, 90% of runners are just there to support one another. A hug. Hug goes a long way.
We love hugs.
Yeah.
I had a great hug off you when we turned up.
I know,
yeah.
It's just, that's the thing, isn't it? It's just be nice.
Where can people find out about you?
So I've got a Facebook page, which is Kez's Great Big Marathon Journey. I'm also on Instagram. I don't use it very well, but is Crazy Kezza, I think, or Kezza. I'm also on Twitter, because my husband told, that was after the marathon, my husband said, you have to sign up on Twitter because you're trending. I was like, okay. But yeah, mostly Facebook. But yeah, if you Google my name, it comes up with, sorry, everyone, it comes up with my face on different things, but yeah.
That's great. Okay, so final question, Kerry. Imagine all your friends and family are on this lovely beach and they're looking out to the sea, and you've hired one of these little planes that carries a little message behind it, and these are your kind of final words of wisdom. What would it say on that message?
Reach for the stars and you can do anything.
I like it. Kerry Aldridge, thank you very much. You're an amazing human.
Thank you.
And I'm really looking forward to following the rest of your journey as well. Yeah, seems like you're only just starting.
I think it is only just starting, really, but we'll see. I hope definitely that I will be faster next year at London, but whatever happens, I guarantee you one thing, and that would be that I will finish it.
I love it. Thank you very much, Kerry.
Thank you.
Subscribe, rate, and review the We Make Success Happen podcast.
This is the We Make Success Happen podcast.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, I would really appreciate you leaving us a great review up on iTunes or your Apple Podcast app. It means a lot. Thank you very much. I've been Matt Callanan, and I'll see you on the next episode.